Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Pandemic Profiteer, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Hustle. Let's get one thing straight. I never set out to be a criminal. I never had some grand scheme to break the system, to defraud the government, to make money off people's ignorance. It just happened, like all the best hustles do. The pandemic cracked the world open like a rotten egg, and inside, chaos, fear, desperation. And if there's one thing I know about human nature, it's this: desperation makes people stupid. They locked us down, forced masks over our faces, canceled flights, closed restaurants, shut down businesses like we were all suddenly living in some dystopian nightmare. People lost their jobs, their sanity. The world came to a screeching halt, and for a minute, I felt it too. Then the vaccine dropped. Suddenly, it was all about compliance. You want to work? Get the shot. You want to travel? Get the shot. You want to eat at a fucking restaurant? Get the shot. It wasn't a choice anymore. It was a leash. And the government had a firm grip on it. That's when I saw it. The opportunity. Some people were scared of needles. Others thought the vaccine was poison. Some just hated being told what to do. It didn't matter why. All that mattered was that they needed a way out. And I could give it to them. At first, it was just a side hustle. A few forged cards here and there. Small bills changing hands under the table. Nothing crazy. But word travels fast when you're offering what people desperately want. Within weeks, I was drowning in orders. Doctors, nurses, pharmacists, people on the inside were willing to play ball for the right price. Hell, some of them even reached out to me. A real vaccination record costs a vial of liquid and 5 seconds of paperwork. My version? A couple of keystrokes and 100 times the price. I had a system. Secure, encrypted messages. Burner phones swapped out every 2 weeks. Meetings in public places, cash only, no repeats. I operated with the paranoia of a fugitive because I knew one thing for sure: sooner or later, someone would talk. Someone always talks. But I wasn't worried. I had rules. And rules keep you alive. 1. No loose ends. If a client got sloppy, got caught, got desperate enough to start naming names, I cut them loose. No refunds. No second chances. If you were dumb enough to let yourself get burned, you weren't my problem. 2. No emotional investments. I didn't care why they wanted fake passports. I didn't care about their kids, their politics, their sob stories. The second you start giving a fuck is the second you make a mistake. And mistakes? They get you locked up. 3. Never get too comfortable. The moment you think you're untouchable is the moment you're already dead. I lived by those rules. And they worked. Until she showed up. Her name was Tessa Wright, and she looked like she had been carrying the weight of the world on her shoulders for years. Late 30s, maybe early 40s. It was hard to tell with the kind of stress that etched itself into a person's face like permanent ink. Her blonde hair was scraped back into a ponytail, so tight it looked painful. A tired pair of green eyes sat above deep, dark circles, and her fingers twitched against the envelope she was gripping like a lifeline. She didn't sit. Didn't waste time. Just slid the cash across the table and dropped a family photo on top of it. 5 passports, she said. Her voice was rough, like someone who smoked too much or screamed too often. I glanced at the photo. A kid, maybe 8 or 9, stood in front of her, grinning like he didn't know the world was a shithole. Her sister was beside her, arm wrapped around a guy who looked like he did manual labor for a living. An older man, probably her father, rounded out the group. I looked back at her. 2 grand a pop. She didn't flinch. She just stared at me, unblinking. Most people hesitated when they heard the price. They bit their lips, asked if I could cut them a deal, acted like they weren't willing to pay whatever it took. But Tessa, she had already decided. This wasn't a negotiation. It was a transaction. She reached into the envelope, pulled out another stack of cash, and shoved it forward. I need these clean. No fuck-ups. If I get stopped, I don't want any questions. I tapped the bills against the table, flipping through them quickly. You understand the risk, right? Her jaw tightened. There is no risk. It's all bullshit. That was the thing about people like her. They didn't want facts. They didn't want logic. They wanted validation. I shrugged. Fine. Give me 2 days. She nodded. Stood up. Walked away without another word. I watched her go, shaking my head. The desperate ones always walk the tightest rope. I should have flagged her right then. Should have known she was the type to get herself caught up in something bigger, something messy. But $2,000 ahead was hard to turn down. I made the passports that night. Perfect, just like always. QR codes, holograms, the whole 9 yards. By the time I was done, they could have passed government inspection without a second glance. When she picked them up, she barely looked at me. Just slid them into her bag, nodded once, and disappeared into the night. And that should have been it. Another client. Another stack of cash. But it wasn't. 2 weeks later, the news broke. A little boy. 8 years old. Dead from the virus. His name was Danny Wright. His mother, Tessa, was missing. And then 3 nights later, she reappeared. But not in the way I expected. She showed up at a vaccine clinic in broad daylight, screaming like a banshee, a goddamn Molotov cocktail in her hand. You promised he'd be safe. And in that moment, as flames licked the front doors, I knew she was going to burn my whole fucking world down. Chapter 2, The Firestarter. I saw the flames before I heard the screams. Thick, black smoke curled into the sky, clawing at the clouds like skeletal fingers. The smell of burning plastic and scorched metal hit my nostrils before my brain even registered what I was looking at. The clinic was on fire. The whole damn place was going up in an inferno of rage and desperation. And standing at the center of it all, front and fucking center, was Tessa Wright. She wasn't just crying. She was wailing. The kind of sound that rips through a person's throat when grief and fury collide. Something primal. Something not meant for human ears. Her face was streaked with soot and tears, her hair wild, eyes bloodshot with rage. She held another Molotov in her shaking hands. Security guards screamed at her to drop it. The people outside the clinic scrambled, ducking for cover, watching in horror as a woman, just a regular, everyday mother, stood there like some kind of biblical reckoning, ready to burn the whole goddamn world down. "You lied to me," she shrieked, voice raw and cracked. "You said he'd be safe." A security officer stepped forward, cautiously, palms out. "Ma'am, listen to me. You need to put that down before someone gets hurt." "Hurt?" Her laugh was hysterical, jagged as broken glass. "He's dead. My baby is dead because of you." And then she locked eyes with me. I wasn't standing close. I was across the street, tucked into the shadows, watching the chaos unfold like a disaster movie I hadn't paid to see. But the second her gaze landed on mine, I felt it, the shift. She knew. She fucking knew. I turned on my heel, heart slamming against my ribs. Walked fast. Not too fast. Just enough to look like I was minding my own business. But my skin was crawling. My muscles screamed run. Tessa was unstable. More than that, she was unhinged. I'd seen it before, in clients who pushed the limits. People who got in too deep. They always break. Always crack under the pressure. But Tessa, she wasn't just cracking. She was shattering. And the worst part, she wasn't going to go down quietly. My phone buzzed in my pocket. I pulled it out with stiff fingers. "Unknown number." "Fuck." I answered, keeping my voice level. "Yeah." A ragged breath on the other end. "You did this." "Tessa." My stomach flipped. I kept walking, slipping into an alleyway between two buildings, pressing my back to the cold brick wall. "Tessa, listen. Don't you fucking say my name," she spat. Her voice was shaking, but there was something else underneath it. Something sharp. "You promised, you fucking liar. You said he'd be fine. You said." "I never promised anything." I cut her off. "You wanted the papers, I gave them to you. You knew the risks." "The risks?" She let out a hollow, humorless laugh. "He was 8, you son of a bitch. He didn't go anywhere, he didn't." Her voice broke, and for a second, all I could hear was her breathing. Harsh. Choked. I kept him home. We didn't even go anywhere. I swallowed hard. "Then how did he get sick?" Silence. It stretched, long and suffocating. When she finally spoke again, it was different. Calmer. More dangerous. "My dad." I closed my eyes. Fuck. I knew where this was going before she even said it. I could picture it so goddamn clearly. The old man probably thought the virus was a hoax, one of those hard-headed boomers who called it just the flu. Walked around maskless, coughing into the air like his breath alone was a middle finger to the government. And Danny paid the price. "He came over last week," she whispered. "Didn't tell me he was sick. Just walked in, kissed Danny on the forehead, sat at my kitchen table like everything was fucking fine. I didn't say anything. There was nothing to say. The silence between us was suffocating. I could hear her breathing, shallow and broken. I could hear the distant crackling of the fire behind her, the echo of police sirens closing in. And then, you killed my son." I tensed. "Tessa, you killed my baby, and I'm going to make sure everyone knows it." My breath hitched. "The fuck are you talking about?" "You." Her voice was steady now, eerily steady. "You sold me that passport. You let my dad believe he was vaccinated. You gave him permission to walk into my home, to breathe on my child, too." She made a strangled noise, half sob, half growl. "The whole world's gonna know," she swore. "I'm gonna burn your entire fucking operation to the ground." Ice shot through my veins. This wasn't just grief. This wasn't just revenge. Tessa Wright was out for blood. And if I didn't move fast, mine was going to be the first to spill. I hung up, threw the phone in the nearest storm drain. Then I ran. Because when a grieving mother sets her sights on revenge, you don't argue. You don't fight. You get the fuck out of the way. Chapter 3, The First Cut. I didn't go home. Home was dangerous. Home was where people get caught, where they wait around thinking they can outsmart the problem. That wasn't me. I didn't wait. I didn't outsmart. I moved. Tessa was a wildfire, and I had seconds before she burned through every bridge I had. I ducked into an alley, peeling my hoodie over my head as I moved, tossing it into a dumpster. The shirt underneath was plain, unremarkable, exactly how I needed to look. I kept my head down, hands shoved in my pockets, and made a beeline for the one place no one ever wants to be in a city like this, the underground. A subway station at midnight is a special kind of purgatory. A mix of drunks, insomniacs, and the kind of people you pretend not to notice. It smelled like piss, metal, and old newspaper, the fluorescent lights above flickering just enough to remind you they could die at any second. I slid my hand into my pocket, fingers brushing against the wad of cash I always kept on me for situations like this. A getaway fund. The burn-it-all-down stash. I needed a new name. A new passport. A new place to fucking breathe. I didn't have time to call my usual guy. Not when Tessa was out there, unraveling, ripping my name from her lips like a war cry. No, I needed someone immediate. Someone who didn't ask questions. That meant Leo. Leo was the kind of guy who'd sell his own mother's social security number if the price was right. He worked out of an abandoned bodega on the east side, running everything from fake IDs to untraceable phones. He wasn't cheap, but he was fast, and that's what mattered. By the time I made it to his spot, my pulse was hammering against my ribs. The sign above the door still read Manny's Deli, but no one had bought a sandwich here in years. The windows were blacked out, covered in layers of dust and graffiti. The door had no handle, just a buzzer. I pressed it. 3 seconds. Then a voice, low and sharp. "Who?" "It's me." Silence. Then, "Me who?" "Open the fucking door, Leo." A pause. Then the mechanical clunk of a deadbolt sliding back. The smell of stale beer and burning plastic hit me the second I stepped inside. The place was a mess, papers, wires, old computer monitors stacked on top of each other. A single hanging bulb swung overhead, casting shadows that made the whole place look like a crime scene. Leo was exactly where I expected him to be, half buried in a pile of paperwork, his fingers stained with ink, his eyes flicking over the rim of his glasses like he was already calculating how much I was worth before I even spoke. "Shit," he muttered, leaning back in his chair. "You look like someone pissed in your cereal." I dropped the cash on his desk. "I need a new name." Leo didn't move. He just exhaled slowly, steepling his fingers like a priest about to deliver bad news. "You in trouble?" "No," I lied. His eyes didn't budge. "You don't usually come here in the middle of the night." I dragged a hand down my face, pulse still slamming. "I need an ID, an untraceable phone, and a rental car under a fresh name. Now." Leo leaned forward, tapping a cigarette against the desk before lighting it. He inhaled deep, exhaling through his nose before he spoke again. "You're running." I didn't answer. He smirked. "You only run when you're scared." Still, I said nothing. Leo leaned back, kicking his feet up on the desk, watching me through the smoke curling between us. "You remember the last time you came to me this rattled?" "I did." It was a different life, a different job, but I still remembered the cold weight of a gun pressed to my back, the taste of copper in my mouth, the way my hands had been shaking when I handed Leo a wad of cash and told him I needed to disappear. He got me out then. He'd get me out now. $3,000, Leo said finally. I peeled off the bills without hesitation. He pocketed them, then cracked his knuckles. Give me an hour. I nodded, sat down, forced myself to breathe. The second my ass hit the chair, my mind started racing again. I needed a plan. A real one. Tessa wasn't just a loose end. She was a fucking razor wire. She was out there, screaming my name, lighting fires in more ways than one. And the worst part, I knew she wasn't stopping. I closed my eyes, rubbing at the ache blooming behind my temples. Think. Think. What would she do first? She wouldn't go to the cops. Not yet. She was too unhinged, too raw. No, she was playing this the way grief-stricken people play everything. Loud, emotional, messy. She was talking. To who? My clients. The realization hit me so fast my fingers dug into the armrest of the chair. She was going to them. Tessa was going to every single person I had ever sold a passport to and shoving my name down their throats. I needed to get to them first. I shot up from the chair. Leo, hurry the fuck up. He glanced at me, brows raised. I said an hour. I don't have an hour. Leo sighed, shaking his head, but didn't argue. He moved faster, fingers flying over the keyboard as he typed in my new alias. I paced, hands in my pockets, blood hammering in my ears. I had a list. A mental one, burned into my skull. Every client, every risk factor. Some of them wouldn't talk. They had too much to lose. But the weak ones? The paranoid ones? The ones who would crack under the slightest pressure? I was fucked. The phone on Leo's desk buzzed. He glanced at it, then smirked. I don't know what kind of mess you're in, but buddy, you might want to start running faster. I swallowed. Why? He turned the phone toward me. A news headline. It wasn't just about the fire. It wasn't just about Tessa. It was about me. My stomach hit the floor. Local woman claims vaccine passport forgery ring led to child's death. Police investigating suspected racketeer. Underneath it, my fucking name. Leo let out a low whistle. Yeah, you're fucked. I wasn't breathing. Everything was crashing down. Tessa hadn't just outed me. She had made me public enemy number one. My hands curled into fists. If I didn't stop her first, she was going to be the death of me. Chapter 4, Blood in the Water. Panic is a slow poison. It starts in your chest, a tightness, a squeeze, then it spreads, into your hands, your legs, your throat, until your whole body is drowning in it. You can't think. You can't breathe. I didn't have time for that shit. I forced myself to move. Leo was still watching me, his cigarette burning down between his fingers, the ember glowing like the last light before the dark. You need to vanish. Now. I ignored him. The damage was already done. My name was out there, my whole fucking operation blown apart, in a single headline. My clients, dozens, maybe hundreds of them, were probably sitting at home right now, phones buzzing, news anchors murmuring my name like I was some kind of urban legend turned real. The feds would be on this. The police. The media. Every dumbass who thought they were smarter than the system was about to start scrambling, deleting texts, wiping emails, burning evidence. And some of them were going to talk. I knew how this worked. I was the first link in a long chain. And if the cops got to that chain before I did, it was over. I grabbed the fake ID Leo had just finished printing, my hands shaking as I shoved it into my pocket. I need the car. Now. Leo sucked his teeth, exhaling a slow stream of smoke before tossing a set of keys onto the table. Black Nissan. No plates. Parked around the corner. I grabbed them and turned for the door. Then his voice stopped me. You know they're gonna come for you, right? I paused. Didn't turn around. Leo's voice was quieter now. Almost sympathetic. If the cops don't find you first, one of your old customers will. He let out a low chuckle, shaking his head. You ever seen a scared animal, man? They don't run. They bite. I swallowed, my throat dry as sandpaper. I knew he was right. I shoved the door open and walked into the night. The Nissan was exactly where Leo said it would be. Parked in the shadows of an old warehouse, tinted windows wiped clean. I slid into the driver's seat, forcing my pulse to slow, and gripped the steering wheel so tight my knuckles went white. Think. I needed a plan. Tessa was the epicenter of this shitstorm, but she wasn't the only problem. I had dozens of names in my head, people who had everything to lose. people who could sell me out to save their own asses. And if I knew them, I knew how this would play out. The weak ones would crack first. The ones who already had one foot in the door of a courtroom. The ones who barely slept at night because they thought today was the day someone knocked on their door. I needed to get to them before the police did. I jammed the key into the ignition and floored it. First stop, David Klein. David was not built for prison. A rich, entitled prick from the Upper East Side. He had paid me 10 grand to make sure his private yacht club friends didn't get locked out of their international vacations. He had everything to lose. And that made him dangerous. I pulled up outside his building, a sleek glass tower with a doorman who took one look at my hoodie and probably assumed I was there to rob someone. "Can I help you?" the guy asked, his tone thick with suspicion. I flashed my most harmless smile. "Yeah, delivery for David Klein. Needs a signature." He narrowed his eyes. "What kind of delivery?" I reached into my pocket, pretending to pull out a phone. Instead, I yanked out a fistful of cash, hundreds crisp and clean. "The kind that makes you forget you saw me." The doorman hesitated. Then he took the money. The glass doors buzzed open. "Sucker." I took the elevator up, heart hammering. David lived in penthouse luxury. The kind of place with floor-to-ceiling windows and overpriced furniture no one actually sat in. When I knocked, I heard scrambling inside, footsteps, whispers, the click of a gun being cocked. Paranoid little fucker. "David," I called, voice calm. "Open up." Silence. I waited. Then, the door cracked open. David was sweating. Shirt unbuttoned, hair a mess. His eyes darted up and down the hallway before yanking me inside and slamming the door shut. "You're out of your fucking mind coming here," he hissed. I didn't blink. "Have the cops called you?" He swallowed hard. "Not yet. But they will." David flinched. That was all the answer I needed. "They're going to offer you a deal," I continued, stepping closer, lowering my voice. "You give them my name, and they'll let you walk." David licked his lips, hands shaking. I wouldn't. "Bullshit." He paled. I took another step forward. "You know what happens if you rat on me?" David's breath hitched. He knew. I leaned in, just enough so he could see the ice in my eyes. "If you say one word, if I hear my name in the wrong mouth, you won't have to worry about the cops." My voice dropped to a whisper. "You'll have to worry about me." David nodded so fast his neck nearly snapped. I turned on my heel and walked out. Next stop, Miguel Miggs Santiago. Miggs was a whole different problem. He wasn't some rich yuppie. He was connected, a street-level guy with a lot of friends and even more enemies. I'd done business with him a few times, setting up fake papers for his crew. If anyone had a reason to talk, it was him. I found him at his usual spot, a rundown dive bar with a busted neon sign that flickered like it was trying to decide whether to live or die. Miggs was already drunk when I walked in. He looked up from his drink, his eyes glassy. "Well, well," he slurred. "If it ain't the dead man walking." I stiffened. "What do you know?" Miggs grinned. "I know there's a price on your head, Cabron." My blood went cold. I pulled up a chair, my pulse slamming like a war drum. "Who put it there?" Miggs swirled his drink, eyes flickering with something dangerous. "The streets are talking, hermano. And they don't like what they hear." He leaned in, voice dropping to a whisper. "People are scared." "And scared people? They make moves." My jaw clenched. I already knew what that meant. Someone was going to come for me. I forced myself to breathe. "Tell me who." Miggs chuckled. "Now, why would I do that?" I grabbed the knife off the bar and jammed it straight through his hand. He screamed, the sound ripping through the bar like a gunshot. I leaned in close, my voice like a blade. "Tell me who." Miggs gasped, blood pooling across the table. "Tessa," he choked. "It's Tessa, man. She's put out word, you're a dead man." I yanked the knife free. Miggs collapsed against the table, gasping. Tessa wasn't just exposing me. She was putting me in the fucking ground. And if I didn't stop her first, she was going to win. Chapter 5, No More Running. Fear isn't just an emotion. It's a living thing. It crawls into your chest, coils around your lungs, digs its claws into your ribs, and doesn't let go. It makes you breathe different, walk different, think different. I wasn't scared when I started this business. I am now. Tessa wasn't just out for revenge. She wasn't just screaming my name into the void, hoping someone would listen. She was hunting me. She had put a bounty on my head, stirred up enough panic to turn my clients against me. And now? Now, I wasn't just running from the cops. I was running from the streets. And if there's one thing I know, it's this. The cops want to arrest you. The streets want to bury you. I was running out of time. First order of business, find Tessa. She had made herself loud. That was her mistake. Desperate people get reckless, and reckless people get caught. I parked the stolen Nissan in a shitty motel lot on the outskirts of the city. The kind of place where the walls were thin, the sheets smelled like cigarettes, and nobody asked questions. I checked in under my new alias, paid in cash, and locked the door behind me. Then I went to work. I had connections. People who knew how to find people. I pulled out my burner phone, scrolled through my contacts, and landed on one name. Tyrell. Tyrell wasn't a friend. He wasn't even an ally. He was a fucking vulture, picking meat off the bones of the desperate and the hunted. But he had ears everywhere, and right now I needed ears. I dialed. A couple of rings. Then a voice, smooth and slow, like honey dripped over a razor blade. "Well, well, well," Tyrell murmured. "If it ain't the man of the fucking hour." I swallowed my pride. "I need a location." He chuckled. "No shit. Whole city looking for your ass. You pissed off the wrong bitch." I gritted my teeth. "Tessa. Where is she?" Silence. Then, the unmistakable sound of a lighter flicking open. A deep inhale. A slow exhale. "You know how this works," Tyrell said finally. "Information costs. I already knew the price. I'll send you 10 grand. Half now, half when I have eyes on her." Another pause. "Then, send the first half." I tapped into one of my crypto accounts, transferred the money, and waited. My foot bounced against the motel carpet. My fingers drummed against my knee. Tyrell wasn't the kind of guy you rushed. Finally, he spoke. "Got a hit on her about 2 hours ago," he said. "Bitches hold up at some shitty little motel. Sunset Inn off Highway 9. I frowned. "She's still in the city?" "She ain't smart enough to leave," he snorted. "Too busy screaming your name and painting a fucking target on her own back." I stood up, pacing. Sunset Inn. That was less than 20 miles away. "She alone?" Tyrell let out a dark little chuckle. "Nope. Got muscle with her. Two guys. Maybe more." I closed my eyes. Fuck. Tessa wasn't just hiding. She was waiting. I ended the call and grabbed my gun. The road to Tessa. The Nissan's tires screeched against the pavement as I tore onto the highway. My heart wasn't just pounding. It was fucking slamming against my ribs like it was trying to break free. I kept picturing it. Danny's little face on the news. The headlines. The fire. The fucking Molotov cocktail. I had played a lot of angles in my life. Lied, cheated, stolen, manipulated. But this? This was a whole new level of bad. Tessa wasn't letting this go. And that meant I couldn't either. I gripped the wheel tighter, white-knuckled, my mind racing. How do I do this? Walk in, guns blazing? Risk a shootout? No. I had to be smart. I had to be better. By the time I pulled up outside the Sunset Inn, the plan had already formed in my head. The setup. The motel looked exactly like I expected. A rundown shithole with a flickering neon sign, cracked pavement, and a front desk clerk who probably sold meth on the side. I didn't go in through the front. I parked in the shadows, grabbed a hoodie from the back seat, and pulled it low over my face. My gun was tucked tight in my waistband, pressing into the small of my back. I moved fast. Room 203. I spotted the first guy immediately. He was standing outside the door, arms crossed, scanning the lot like he was Secret Service. Dumbass. He wasn't even paying attention when I walked up behind him. One quick, sharp movement, knife across the throat, and he was done. I caught his body, dragged him around the corner, and propped him up like a drunk taking a nap. One down. I pressed my back against the wall, inhaled slowly, then moved to the door. Voices inside. Tessa's voice. I couldn't hear the words, but I felt the rage behind them. I pulled out my gun. Knocked. Silence. Then footsteps. Slow. Hesitant. The door cracked open. I didn't wait. I shoved inside, gun raised, eyes sweeping the room. Tessa. Her eyes went wide. The second guy moved, too slow. I shot him in the leg. He collapsed, screaming. Tessa lunged for the gun on the table. I moved faster. Grabbed her by the wrist. Yanked her forward. Slammed her against the wall so hard the cheap drywall cracked. Her breath was ragged, her eyes wild with hate. "You should have stayed quiet," I whispered. She bared her teeth. "You should have died in that fire." I pressed the gun under her chin. "You lost, Tessa." Her breath hitched. But there was something else in her eyes. Not fear. Not regret. Satisfaction. And then I heard it. The sirens. Loud. Close. I spun toward the window. Red and blue lights flooding the parking lot. Cops. Everywhere. I turned back to Tessa, heart slamming in my chest. She smiled. You're not the only one who knows how to set a trap, she whispered. I sucked in a sharp breath. She had called them. She had baited me here. I was fucking trapped. The whole motel lit up like a goddamn Christmas tree. Flashing lights. Barking orders. I had seconds to decide. Fight. Run. Kill her. Tessa held my gaze, breathing hard, the fire in her eyes still burning. And for the first time since this whole mess started, I wasn't sure if I was the hunter or the prey. Chapter 6, The Noose Tightens. Checkmate. That's what this was. A goddamn checkmate, and I had walked right into it. The motel room was a trap. The sirens outside. The flashing lights. The barking voices echoing through the parking lot. That wasn't bad luck. It wasn't a coincidence. It was Tessa's endgame, and she had played me like a goddamn fiddle. I had spent days running, hiding, thinking I was ahead of her, thinking I could still pull the strings, still control the board. But I wasn't controlling shit. Tessa had set the pieces in motion, and now, she had me cornered. Outside, the cops were moving in. Fast. I could hear them shouting, their boots pounding against the pavement, the click of guns being readied. They weren't here to talk. They weren't here to negotiate. They were here to take me down. I had seconds to decide. Run. Fight. Kill. My mind spun through the options, the risks, the escape routes. But deep down, I already knew. There was no way out of this one. Tessa had made sure of that. The standoff. I turned my head slowly, my grip tightening around the gun still pressed under her chin. She didn't flinch. Didn't even blink. Her breath came in short, ragged bursts, her pulse hammering in her throat. But her eyes? Her eyes were steady. She had been waiting for this moment. Planning for it. You think this is over? I asked, my voice low, sharp as a blade. Tessa exhaled through her nose, a bitter, breathy laugh. It is for you. I could feel the heat coming off her, the raw hatred burning just beneath her skin. She wanted this. She wanted me to feel it, the same helplessness, the same dread, the same gut-wrenching loss she had felt when they zipped her kid into a body bag. I pushed harder, forcing her head back against the wall, my finger twitching over the trigger. One shot. That's all it would take. One squeeze, one flash of light, and Tessa Wright would be nothing but a stain on a shitty motel wall. But I didn't pull it. Not yet. Because outside, the noose was tightening. Final warning. A voice boomed from a megaphone, cutting through the thick, stifling air. Put your weapons down and come out with your hands up. Fuck. They were going to storm the room. Guns blazing. And I'd be standing here like a goddamn idiot, caught red-handed, a weapon in my grip and nowhere to go. Tessa must have seen it in my face, the realization, the split-second calculation of how royally fucked I was, because she smiled. Not a happy smile. Not a victorious smile. No. It was the smile of a woman who had nothing left to lose. You're done, she whispered. I sucked in a sharp breath. She was right. But if I was going down, I wasn't going down alone. Breaking the board. 5 seconds. That's how long I had before the cops blew the door off the hinges and filled the room with lead. I made my choice. Fast. My grip snapped away from Tessa. I grabbed the injured guy off the floor, yanking him up as a human shield just as the door exploded inward. Boom. The whole room shook, dust and splinters flying everywhere, the walls rattling as dozens of red dots lit up my chest. Drop the weapon. On the ground now. The guy in my arms was screaming, blood pouring from his leg, his voice breaking in sheer panic. Don't shoot. Don't shoot. My brain was running a mile a second, processing everything at light speed. There were at least 15 cops outside. SWAT gear. Bulletproof vests. High-powered rifles trained right at me. I didn't stand a chance. But that didn't mean I was out of moves. I pressed the gun against the hostage's temple. Back the fuck off. I roared. A ripple of tension passed through the cops. They hesitated. That's all I needed. In one blazing second, I hurled the guy forward, forcing the cops to adjust their aim. And I ran. Out the window. Glass shattered around me as I launched myself through the air, twisting midfall, feeling the wind slam against my face. I hit the pavement hard, my shoulder taking the brunt of the impact, pain exploding through my bones. I rolled, gasping, sprinting before I even fully registered the pain. Shouts. More gunfire. I could hear the cops scrambling, trying to reposition, trying to catch up. But they were too slow. I had a head start. and that's all I needed. The escape. I tore across the lot, my lungs screaming for air, my feet pounding against the pavement. I didn't stop. Didn't hesitate. I knew this city. Knew the alleys, the shortcuts, the places where a man could disappear if he was fast enough. My legs burned as I cut down a narrow street, jumping over a dumpster, dodging past a couple of drunks who barely had time to turn their heads before I was gone. I could still hear them behind me. The shouts. The sirens. I wasn't out yet. Not even close. I needed a car. A way out. I spotted one. A black sedan, engine running. Some asshole too busy looking at his phone to notice the shitstorm happening behind him. I didn't even think. I yanked the door open, grabbed him by the collar, and ripped him out of the driver's seat. What the fuck? I punched him in the jaw. Hard. He went down like a sack of bricks. I jumped in, slammed the door, and floored it. Tires screamed as I tore onto the main road, weaving between traffic, heart pounding so goddamn hard I thought it might explode. I checked the mirror. Cops. Sirens. Lights. But I still had one last trick up my sleeve. I reached into my pocket, pulled out my last burner phone, and dialed a number I never thought I'd have to call. It rang once. Twice. Then a voice answered. Rough. Cold. Dangerous. You better be calling me for a good reason. I exhaled sharply. I need a way out of this city. A pause. Then. You just started a fucking war, didn't you? I gripped the wheel, teeth clenched. Yeah, I muttered. And I need an army. The line went dead. I tossed the phone out the window. I wasn't running anymore. It was time to burn this whole fucking game to the ground. Chapter 7. Burn it all down. You ever reach a point where the fear just stops? Where it burns so hot, so fast, that it turns into something else? That's where I was. I wasn't scared anymore. I wasn't running anymore. Tessa had made her move. She thought she had me trapped. Thought she had pulled the ultimate checkmate. But there was one thing she didn't understand. Some people don't play to win. Some people play to burn the whole fucking board. And that's exactly what I was about to do. A deal with the devil. The black sedan roared down the freeway, my grip tight on the wheel. The adrenaline hadn't worn off. It wasn't going to. Not until this was over. The call I made. That was my last card to play. A Hail Mary. And the person I called? Someone worse than the cops. His name was Victor Costa. And if the streets had a god, it was him. Victor wasn't a gangster. He wasn't some wannabe thug with a gun and a temper. He was bigger than that. His hands were in everything. Drugs, guns, money laundering, fraud. If there was a way to make money off the suffering of others, Victor had already figured it out and put a price tag on it. And me? I had just put a target on my back so big he couldn't ignore it. By the time I reached the meeting spot, a deserted warehouse on the edge of the city, the sun was bleeding over the horizon, the sky caught between deep orange and violent red. I pulled in slow, headlights cutting through the darkness. They were already there. Black SUVs. No plates. Windows tinted to hell. And standing right in the center of it all, wearing a suit that probably cost more than my entire life, was Victor fucking Costa. I killed the engine. Stepped out. And walked straight into the lion's den. The bargain. Victor watched me approach, hands in his pockets, expression unreadable. He had that quiet kind of danger about him. The type of man who didn't need to raise his voice to make people afraid. Behind him, his men stood like statues, armed to the teeth. No movement. No words. Just waiting. I stopped a few feet away. No one spoke. Then, "You must be desperate," Victor said. His voice was low. Smooth. Like the sound of a blade being unsheathed. I let out a slow breath. "You heard." "I did." His head tilted slightly. "You've made quite the mess." I wiped a hand down my face, my body still buzzing with adrenaline. "I need her dead." Victor smiled. It was slow. Calculated. The kind of smile that made your blood run cold. "Tessa Wright," he murmured, like he was savoring the name. I nodded. Victor took a step closer. I didn't move. "You're asking me to take out a grieving mother," he said, voice laced with amusement. "You do realize how that makes you look." I clenched my jaw. "She won't stop." "She's already won," he countered. "Your name is out. The cops are hunting you. Your business is dead. And now, because of her, you're here. With me." Silence. He wasn't wrong. But I wasn't here for a goddamn lecture. "I didn't come for philosophy," I said. "I came for results." Victor chuckled. His men didn't move. Then finally, "What's in it for me?" I exhaled sharply, forcing myself to keep my pulse steady. Everything. Victor raised an eyebrow. I kept going. My contacts. My files. My system. All of it. You get access to everything. The networks I built, the money that's still moving through my accounts, the people who are still out there. You take it all. That got his attention. His eyes gleamed, dark and sharp. Predatory. You're offering me your empire. I nodded once. In exchange for her life. Victor didn't answer right away. Instead, he studied me. Like a scientist dissecting an insect. Then slowly, he pulled a cigar from his pocket, lit it, and exhaled a cloud of smoke into the dawn air. Done, he said. And just like that, the deal was sealed. Hunting Tessa. I didn't have to do a damn thing after that. Victor's men moved fast. By the time the sun had fully risen, Tessa Wright's entire world was collapsing. Her safe houses? Gone. Her allies? Dead or vanished. She had been playing offense for days. Now, for the first time, she was running. And she wasn't fast enough. I didn't get the call until hours later. I was in another stolen car, parked at the edge of the city, watching the world move around me like a movie I wasn't part of anymore. The phone rang once. I answered. A voice. One of Victor's men. It's done. I breathed out slowly, my grip tightening on the wheel. Where? Abandoned lot. East side. A pause. Then, with a smirk in his tone, you want to say goodbye? I closed my eyes. Then started the car. The end of Tessa Wright. The lot was exactly what I expected. Cold, empty, forgotten. A patch of land where people went to disappear. And in the center of it, Tessa. On her knees. Hands tied behind her back. Her face was bloodied, her lips split. But she was still glaring. Still defiant. Still Tessa fucking Wright. I stepped closer, hands in my pockets. My heart was steady. My mind clearer than it had been in days. She spat blood onto the dirt. You really think this changes anything? I tilted my head. You tell me. Tessa laughed. It wasn't weak. It wasn't broken. It was something else. You still lose, she whispered. I stared at her. She lifted her chin, eyes locked onto mine, voice barely above a breath. They'll come for you. They'll never stop. And for the first time since this whole fucking mess started, I smiled, because I knew something she didn't. I leaned in, close enough that she could hear every syllable when I whispered. Neither will I. Then I stepped back, nodded to Victor's men, and walked away. I didn't need to hear the gunshot. I already knew how it ended. The aftermath. I left the city that night. Burner phone? Gone. Old identity. Dead. I walked into the airport under a brand new name, handed over a real passport, and boarded a one-way flight to nowhere. The world would forget me. And if it didn't, I'd make it. Because people like me, we don't die. We just change the rules. And next time? Next time, there won't be a Tessa Wright to stop me. Next time, I won't leave loose ends.